some of these titles I'm not even sure are horror. So the reality behind them is that they are the most mainstream. I mean, we've gone from Zombie Nosh to Adam Wingard. So they're the most mainstream of anyone's list, but I'm still going to do it because I am having no more rules today, Mark. I'm having no more rules.
Fine.
Hello and welcome to the AV Forums 4K and Blu-ray podcast for September tonight. I'm joined by Mark Costello.
Hello, everybody.
And Simon Crust.
Slurp, slurp.
Nice. For our September 4K and Blu-ray podcast, we'll be offering up our usual top 10 list of recommended discs on for September. And then we'll deep dive into our topic of the month, which is what are some of the top horror gems out there on 4K. But first, some competitions. You can win £500 to spend with MBP, the largest global platform to buy, sell, trade in used photo and video gear. Closing date for that's 11:59, Thursday, 24th of October. You can also win an LG Cinebeam Q projector worth £1,000. £1,000. A compact and portable 4K projector with wireless connectivity for streaming, movie watching, and gaming wherever you want. Closing date for that is 11:59, Tuesday, 15th of October. All competitions are open to eligible AV Forums members over 18 who are residents of the UK. So head over to avforums.com/competitions to enter. There are also a whole bunch of disc competitions. There's a Nikita one. There's a Hitcher one, which will come into play later.
Get in.
There's lots out there. Right. Our recommendations. So we always start. We do our top 10 4Ks, but we always start with Mark's good old 1080p. He did a top 10 Blu-rays for September. I just added some competitions to recently, actually. So,
excellent.
What was your pick of this month's releases?
My pick was something called Death Game, which, for those that know me, will come as no surprise. What this is cast your minds back a few years to modern Schlockmeister Eli Roth and his Keanu Reeves saucy, sexy thriller, Knock Knock. Mm-hmm. You know, the one where Keanu's at home and there's a knock at the door and it's two very attractive, bedraggled young ladies, one of whom was Ana de Armas before she was famous, interestingly enough. And strange, sexy, violent games ensue. Well, that is a remake of Death Game, this 70s grindhouse exploitationer, which actually has its own starry cast. Instead of Keanu Reeves, it's Seymour Cassell. And the two young ladies here are the one-time Mrs. Clint Eastwood, Sondra Locke, and the one-time Apocalypse Now play bunny, Colleen Camp. And it's brutal exploitation. The two of them make all his dreams come true and then make all his nightmares come true as well as the night and day ensue. It's grotty, it's gritty. There's some actually, the acting is really good in it, and it's actually got a lot to say about generational politics, sexual politics, the Watergate scan, all that kind of stuff is all in there somewhere, but it never forgets that it is a saucy, grotty exploitation, and it is huge fun. Get it watched. Plus, the disc is an absolute banger. Hours of new interviews and making ofs. There's a whole second film in there, which Death Game itself was a remake of. So honestly, from Radiance, it's just a brilliant release. Get it. Get it now.
Nice.
Is there a work print included?
I wish.
4K releases. Again, why is this in here? We put Orca in here. You gave it a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, but Orca is a great film.
Yeah, but let me just counter that with,
well, yes. This is one of those where the release does not do the film justice. The film itself, for those, you know, it is on paper, it is an Italian Jaws ripoff. Yes, it is a man-eating killer whale. However, tonally, it's anything but. It's a great cast. You've got Richard Harris, Charlotte Rampling, Bo Derek, brilliant in it. Richard Harris is amazing. The tone is, there is a scene in this that basically turns the nurturing family man male orca into the vengeful killing machine that will live with you till the end of your days. It is that grim. I won't go into it now, but yeah, the film is brilliant. It's maudlin, it's melancholy, and interestingly enough, it is the one where the humans are the bad guys. But it's really well done.
It feels like the fish-based version of Seagulls on Deadly Ground.
Possibly. But the problem with this is the release. So the 4K picture is probably about as good as it can get. It looks like there's been some slight grain management, but the thing is, there was a load of soft filter used. So it doesn't scream 4K at you. Couple it with the fact it's only got one extra, which is a fairly bland 30-minute interview with someone who just waxes lyrical about it. Couple it then with that steelbook design, and you think, blimey, I might wait for the inevitable US release that's coming down the line. At least it'll look better on Michelle.
Some might like pictures of Richard Harris. I can't tell. Is he stuck in?
He's been eaten. He's been eaten by the whale.
Where's the rest of him? If that's his head, where's...
It's a very small whale. It's like that.
It just ate his head.
Teeny whale.
Whale ate his head. And it's stuck, and it's transparent. I mean, it's a design, I tell you. It's a swing and a miss. Second entry, Bad Boys Ride or Die. I mean, you know that 4K Bad Boys.
Yeah, what you gonna do?
They do
when they come for you?
Yeah, they do that. I mean, they do it slightly differently from you, Mark.
I would hope so. Thank goodness. I really would hope so.
So it's a Sony disc of a Bad Boys movie from 2024. I mean, you know it's going to be demo. I enjoyed this. I possibly enjoyed it more than the last one. And on a rewatch of the first and the second, I might have even enjoyed it more than the second one. But I do like the Bad Boys movies, and I do think they've got chemistry, and they still seem to be able to pull something off. But God, what would I know? I liked Axel F. Sudden Death in 4K, Van Damme, Kino.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's right up
there. That was Booth Moore. Come on.
Yeah, sure. Okay, but it's still up there next to Hard Target, which is next to Face Off in the little Kino collection of ridiculous action gems that you just didn't expect. Where's my Con Air? And where are they going to stick these?
All you need now is Time Cop.
I do need Time Cop in there. But I'm sure there are some other ones they could pull out and stick in there from that era. The Rock. The Rock, have we got The Rock 4K? Where's The Rock 4K?
No, but that's not on this shelf. That's on a different shelf.
All right, fair enough. I'll agree with that. Red Sun 4K.
Red Sun 4K.
Yes. I still haven't watched this.
It's an unusual little hybrid of a film, a cross between a Western and some kind of Akira Kurosawa samurai film. Charles Bronson and Mifune come together, one a gunslinger, one a samurai, in the deserts of Spain to try and find a sword. It's a buddy-buddy movie. It's curious and great and wonderful and stupid and bloody and booby and savvy.
I heard the magic words.
Yeah,
bloody you and booby.
You had me at Mifune. You had Mark at booby. Yes, it's all good in the world.
Yeah, it's a good picture. It's nice sounds. A few extras on it. Yeah, it's an unusual one from that era of the 1960s, particularly when you've got the all the spaghettis are released in the US but not here. So to release this one, which is kind of the same era. Kind of the same ilk, filmed in a lot of the same places as Sergio Leone's stuff. But yeah, it's a good. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it when I saw it, a million years ago on VHS.
Nice. I'm a big Mifune fan, but I don't think I'd ever come across it. But I don't think I'm not a Charles Bronson fan, but I'm not. I just haven't watched much. It's a bit like Chuck. Just never watched many Chuck Norris films beyond. Delta Force. Yeah. And it's the same with Charles Bronson. If he was in, Great Escape, or if he was in something, then sure. But I didn't watch much Charles Bronson.
Not watch Death Wish?
Maybe one of them, but they all blur.
They all blur.
It's, yeah. Love, Death and the Apocalypse. So I was intrigued by this release. Mark, you got all three films.
I did. And these are the
You
first three
loved
films.
it.
I did. I absolutely loved it. I'd not heard the name Alex de la Iglesia, excuse my pronunciation before, but he's very much a mid-90s peer of the likes of early Peter Jackson, of Sam Raimi, of Edgar Wright. He creates outrageously fun genre gems, and we've got the first three here. Acción Mutante is a sci-fi kidnapping that takes place on a distant desert planet. It's just bananas. Day of the Beast is a riff on The Omen, but with a warped little twist on it. There is a priest who is desperate to get his place at the birth of the Antichrist, and the only way he can do it is to commit as many sins as possible. And his idea of committing sins, it's warped, it's fun. And speaking of warped and fun, Perdita Durango, it's the one that probably most people have
I've
heard
heard
of
of,
because it
yeah.
was US funded. It stars Javier Bardem and Rosie Perez, and it's basically natural born killers if it was off its tits on a bender in Vegas. It's just bananas.
It's the character from Lynch, Wild at Heart.
Yes.
Isabella
She's played by
Rossellini.
Isabella Rossellini. Yeah, so it's
Yes.
just slightly different.
Yeah,
But
I know,
the
but
the thing with each of these films are they come on typical Arrow set, 3 4K discs. There's no 1080p. They are stacked with extras. Now, they port over all of the extras that were released on the individual Severin releases from a couple of years ago, but then Arrow stick a few more on as well. So you have a huge amount. You've got feature length making ofs, you've got commentaries, you've got new interviews, legacy interviews. The transfers on them are probably as good as you're going to get, but these are fairly low budget, quickies knocked off. But as a set, as a way of introducing you to this filmmaker, it can't be beaten. It's a fantastic way, I think, and Arrow are to be really applauded of getting these films out there and introducing a wider audience to these type of they are their horror, comedy, splatter, sci-fi. All of them are all mixed up, and oh, it's modern day exploitation at its best. So yeah, get them bought and watched. It's great fun.
nice. Luc Besson, Nikita. I mean, I think it's one of his classics. It's
Never seen it.
yeah,
Oh,
don't even,
I know.
don't. If I ship you that disc, will you actually watch it?
No, I'm gonna go buy it.
Okay. Is that
Yeah,
because I told you that
it's
her
got
eyes are
spot
like
gloss.
spot gloss? Yeah,
Spot gloss. That's it's second only to magnet clasps.
I tell you what, the steelbook's gorgeous. It's a gorgeous steelbook release. It's one of my favorite Besson movies, but I really think peak Besson for me was Leon, and Nikita has so much DNA with Leon, not least Jean Reno in what is essentially the work print version of his character Leon. I think it's fantastic. It's taut and it's pretty low budget, but they got a lot done with it. It's got Jackie Cario in it. Anna Paralade is Nikita, David Hughes Anglaise, Daniel Hughes Anglaise,
Don Hughes on glaze.
John Hughes Anglaise. Nice. It's a lovely little film. Some great action and still eager early Besson. Before he like put his stories into, this weird randomizer and started churning out Taken from Paris with Love, Taxi 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, before the days of his screenwriting, he did actually have something. I mean, this must have been unusual in France in like the early 90s. This must have been like it's interesting. The disc I watched all the extras on, Shock Horror to Mark. And they're actually great. Double shock horror to me. One of them is footage from the original premiere where Besson, Eric Serra, the composer, and the three main actors all turn up on stage in front of the audience to take a Q&A before the film. And it was interesting to me the fact that a lot of the interviews with the people who were watching the film were talking about how in France, French movies don't really do what Besson was doing. I mean, we're used to it, and perhaps American audiences were more used to it, but the style and the flavor and the punch of what he was doing was really quite remarkable. And I think he does a great job with Nikita. Also, Checky Cario is an interview, modern interview, and he's talking about how they almost got the funding to make it in the US with
Oh,
Mickey Rourke and
it
Christopher
wouldn't have been the
Walken.
same.
It wouldn't have been
Blimey.
the same, but it got me spiraling because I thought that, Mickey Rourke, Christopher Walken in that era could have been really interesting. And then it got me thinking, that's probably how he ended up with an American Leon, because that's what it is. I mean, Leon could have easily been shot in France as a kind of semi-sequel to Nikita.
It is. Leon is
But
not an American film, though. Leon is
no, I.
fully French.
No, I know what you mean, but like it's the
American
setting
thunder.
in America with an American cast is what would have happened to Nikita if they'd lined up those pieces. Because they phoned up Checky and he was doing something else, and they were like, "We really want you for this." Besson was like, "I really want you for this." And he didn't hear from him again. And then when he heard from him, it was like, "We got Christopher Walken and Mickey Rourke lined up because the American funders want those kind of names in it." And then the phone call was that all dropped through. We got French funding. We're doing it in France. We need you back. So I guess what I mean is that by getting the American funding to do Leon, it had to come with a number of different cast members, like your Gary Oldman, like your Natalie Portman. It just had to go a slightly different. Even if Jean Reno is a fantastic holdover. It had to have that flavor. Anyway, fa fabulous movie, great disc, get it, and Steelbook Eyes. The Hitcher, 4K, beautiful box set.
Beautiful box set. Yeah, and a spectacular film. What could almost be on our list of horrors that you need to see more of because,
It
it
is
hasn't
the
been around for
film.
years.
No, it is the film that kickstarted this whole subject for, and none of you have got it on the list, but it is the film that is
We're talking
led
about it
us there.
here.
Yeah, okay, all right. But anyway, yes.
It's a spectacular film. Rutger Hauer in one of his best performances. He's absolutely terrifying in it, right from the very first scene that you see him in, when he first doesn't even get in the car, and you're thinking, Jesus Christ, I'm not sure I'd let that bloke in my car. He's absolutely brilliant. When he sits in there and those eyes pierce you through your screen. Oh, I was talking about steely eyes. Whoa, steely eyes, I'm telling you.
Whoa.
Oh,
But
and he
it's the
doesn't let up.
smile. It's the smile sometimes that gets you. There's a smile to Rutger Hauer, like he will kill you, but smile while doing it.
While doing it, so it's a superb film. He is just terrifying in it all the way through. There's essentially only three people in it, and they all do fantastic work. What's the story? Boy picks up a hitchhiker, boy gets terrorized by a hitchhiker.
Yeah.
And
It's
that's all you
quite.
really need to know. But the
Yeah.
execution of it's done that is just superb. Absolutely terrifying film. Absolutely horrible. Again, a superb set. Even if you get the non-fat version, you get a boatload of extras, both old and new. Really push the boat out. It's a fantastic set. Very, very impressive. Loved it.
Nice. Nice. Well, it's the whole reason we have this podcast
It
topic.
is.
But my pick of the month was Riddick. I don't know whether Mark, have you got your copy
Yeah,
yet?
I've got it and I've
Yeah.
seen it. Yeah, I
And
watched it last night.
did you? Did you
I
watch?
did.
Has anyone watched the open mat version yet? I mean, Mark, you had completely ignored me, even with your projector. Okay.
Yes.
But
Yeah,
you
that's the
watched the
version I
open mat
watched.
version.
Yeah.
And what do you think?
Great. Really nice. Very enjoyable. Superb Atmos track.
Oh, the Amos is
I
amazing
didn't
on it.
feel there was any frame wasted. No, it was great. Really good film.
I
really
mean,
good
I have to say I had a lot of fun revisiting this. I didn't think I would, and I think that Arrow have gone above and
It's
beyond.
a superb set,
Yeah,
yeah.
I
For the
really
money, it's
didn't
superb.
expect it. And it's interesting because I would say, and I'm not knocking the gorgeous limited edition sets that I have taking up far too much room on the shelves, but this is an example, as far as I can tell, of one of the only limited edition sets where the exclusive extra is a disc.
Yeah.
And that disc is, to me, invaluable. It's like a 4K open aspect ratio version of the movie with Atmos, which is my go-to watch of the movie from now on. And that is only available on this limited edition. I've never come across that on a limited edition release before. That's genius. Michael Mann would have a field day with this if they get any of his films. Limited edition release with like three
So
other cuts.
now I want the keep in open mat as well now. Come on,
Yeah.
Vinegar Syndrome. Get your finger out. This November, come on. No open mat, no sale. That's all I'm saying.
With finished VFX. Anyway, I absolutely loved it, and like Si says, I think I didn't think the frames were wasted. It
No.
didn't feel like someone had just done it as a gimmick. It actually felt like someone seriously considered that this should be released like this. And the scale of some of the settings is considerably more immense than in the standard 2.4 version. And I do prefer that scale used for this movie. And it's interesting because all the VFX are finished. So it really must have gone a long way, open mat, before someone went, nah, we want 2.4, then just do the bite bars, please. And it's not, I also read that it's not quite centered. So the 2.4 version isn't just black bars at the top and bottom and stripped out the center. It's actually slightly offset so that there's a different amount of headroom. I think it goes high, so there's a lot more on the bottom than there is extra on the top. But either way, it's interesting.
Nice.
An interesting version. Oh, those are our recommendations. What have we got coming out? You got any tips for us on what's coming soon, Mark? The
Tips,
Keep.
you mean new stuff, Kaz?
Yeah, The Keep.
All
The
right.
Keep.
No, not been announced, though it doesn't make the list.
Yeah.
So normally here we launch straight into what the boutiques are doing, but it feels like this month the majors are fighting back with a cavalcade of announcements and some really hefty titles coming our way before the year is out. Let's start with Paramount. They've announced The Amazing Galaxy Quest. Love it.
Oh,
On
nice.
December the 3rd. Apparently, the bonus is going to come with the I've heard rumors that the Never Surrender documentary is going to be on there. That
Oh, that
might be
is
a load of
awesome.
that might be a load of old rubbish, but I have heard various rumors.
If it's on there, that I'll make that. I mean, it's a must-have disc anyway, but if that's on it, because that's a great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're also bringing White Christmas and the snappily titled Zazz collection. Of course, those in the know that is the Zucker Abraham Zucker collection, which comprises of The Naked Gun, Airplane, and Top Secret in a three
Oh.
box set release. That's coming. Warner Brothers are launching their classic Hitch North by Northwest at start November, which will also coincide with their release of The Last Cameron Standing. That's right, The Terminator. Officially now announced in Steelbook and Amaray editions everywhere. Sony are bringing us some Little Women, the 90s version that is, on November the 19th, while Universal are delivering us some Spielberg with the underrated and underseen Sugarland Express getting a 15th anniversary edition in the coming months. While not to be outdone, Disney in the States and Icon over here are letting us have some more Shyamalan with The Sixth Sense, Signs in the Village all officially now coming on both sides of the Atlantic. Between October, if you're over in the States, and December, if you're over here. The minor majors, the likes of Lionsgate and Studio Canal, are readying a 25th anniversary edition of the David Koepp classic Chiller Stir of Echoes on the
Oh,
10th of
nice.
December, and the Carol Reed just all over classic The Third Man on the 4th of November, getting a 75th anniversary set. But of course, the boutiques aren't taking that line down. No, sir. They've responded in kind. With their own somewhat big guns, as it were. So Kino are delivering us some Friedkin. Granted, it's only The Hunted, but
I'll
still Friedkin.
still watch it.
And a brace of Clint with Play Misty for me in the Eiger Sanction coming. Shout are going full on gonzo with Kinski and Herzog prattling about in the jungle with Aguirre, Wrath of God, coming on the 5th of November, while Severin are getting their freak on with Russ Meyer and his threesome of Vixen films for those that like their 4Ks to have a little more bounce, shall we say. And finally, Arrow have saved the best to last. We're hopefully going to get the single best-looking 4K ever with Tarsem Singh's Criminally Ignored The Cell coming in December. And although these haven't been announced, the tease was strong. The tease was almost terminal that Arrow are bringing the three Leone Spaghetti Western classics to 4K before the end of the year. They teased it with a little picture. The internet lost its collective marbles. Hopefully they're coming. And that's it. So some really good stuff and some major titles coming between now and the end of the year. So, yeah,
wow, that good is release schedule. Good. Do we know for sure that The Cell is coming in the UK?
No, no, actually, I think you're right, Kaz. Thank you for correcting.
No, I'm not
it
trying
It is
to.
Arrow US.
Is it really? Oh, but yeah. Is there still a chance we'll get it?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Come on, you should know these things. What's wrong with you, Mark? This is ridiculous. This is a life or death situation.
I just steal other people's research off the internet, Kaz. What do you want from me?
Terrible. Having to go to the Arrow website and click on US and then change the currency. It's just such a pain ordering from the US site.
It's terrible.
Straight to my door. Right. Our physical media horror discussion. Deep cuts. Top horror gems. Mark, would you like to tell us what your five... I mean, obviously the number one choice is The Hitcher, because we just talked about The Hitcher. It's The Hitcher. No, go on. Tell us. What are the five? Go.
So... self-imposed rules here. I wasn't going to talk about anything I've reviewed on the site. I wasn't going to talk about anything I've already talked about on one of the various
rules
podcasts.
Here.
Yes, I am. We need rules, Kaz. The world is governed by rules. Therefore, some of these are not necessarily deep cuts, but some of these are ones which I don't hear a lot of people talking about. So the first one I'm going to talk about is Cabin in the Woods. Now, this is a horror comedy from Drew Goddard, Joss Whedon, and yes... it starts off like a smug, know-it-all satire on a cabin-in-the-wood horror. Beautiful people go out for a holiday, they get terrorized, and the trailer beautifully gives away the fact that there is a corporate big machine behind the scares. Ho, 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 we go. How jolly, droll, and funny. And in actual fact, it is. It really is funny. But... Goddard and Whedon saved the best to last. They still managed to wheel out a third act that is just utterly bananas. And it is such a clever celebration, as well as a warm-hearted, slight ribbing of the genre. And of course, it's on 4K with a beautiful Atmos track, and it's great. So Cabin in the Woods, for those who like their horror, a little bit funny, a little bit clever, but also incredibly bloody and hilariously nihilistic all at the same time.
Is that I got mine from the US, and I saw that was a US disc you showed up there. Is it available in the UK?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
it is.
Although we haven't reviewed it, so I feel like a review is necessary.
I thought
to be confirmed. Sorry. To be confirmed.
Okay, fine. Play the next.
My next one. Because we're on a clock here, Kaz. Remember, we're on a clock. I'm going creature feature, because who doesn't love a good creature feature? And of course, that can only mean one thing. It can only mean ticks. That's right. Ticks from Vinegar Syndrome. As usual, it's glorious. Ticks is the heartwarming tale of a weekend outing for a group of urban troubled youths to a surprisingly cabin in the woods that just so happens to be backing onto the fields of some chemically enhanced marijuana. God. I believe the kids pronounce
would
it.
Would you believe it?
But of course, those chemicals have seeped into the ground, and those pesky little blood-sucking critters have slurped it all up and turned into huge mutant beasties, which basically eat everyone. And it's amazing. Well, there are some hilarious hallucinogenic turns in it, shall we say. But it's got, you got Brian Yuzner on producing duty. So you know it's icky, it's slimy, it's sloppy. You've got a great cast. You've got a young Seth Green. You've got Alfonso Ribeiro, Carlton from The Fresh Prince, playing a hard ass whose nickname is Panic.
Does he dance?
That's right. It's look, it's utter tripe, but it's a practical effects fest for the eyes. It's naff, it's brilliant, it's rubbish, it's amazing, it's all of it. The disc from Vinegar Syndrome, Region 3 4K, Region A locked Blu-ray with the extras on, but it's a great brand new 4K restoration. There's a great near feature length making of on there. It's a superb release for fans of Critters.
Very nice.
Okay, I'm about facing now. I'm going a little bit earlier and a little bit more serious. Now, when most people think of silent horror, they'll think of two films. They will think of Murnau's Nosferatu.
Of course.
And they will think of this one. They will think of The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. Now, the reason why they think of this is the imagery. If anyone, if you ever want to explain what German expressionism looks like, show them that. There's not a right angle in it. The nightmare dreams. It's like Tim Burton's Nightmare Before Christmas on acid. But it's not just the design. It's got an ultra-modern narrative structure. It's bookended as a flashback with untrustworthy narrators. All of that packed into 80 minutes. If you've not seen, if you've yet to take a dive into silent cinema, because, you know, ooh, it's all overly theatrical and, ooh, they've got all those frame rate problems and all that kind of stuff that stops you watching it, just go and get this. This version here was the limited edition release, but I think Eureka have released a standard version of it now. It's cleaned up beautifully. Absolutely beautifully. The tints on it are gorgeous. Loads of extras. Honestly, if you have yet to dive into early horror, you can't get better than there. So yeah, highly recommended. The next one, I'm going across the sea. I'm going to our friends over in the States, and I'm going for a film written by the creator of Alien, Dan O'Bannon. And it is a film called Dead and Buried. Now, this is a Blue Underground release, so it's an American 4K. But Dead and Buried is small town fishing village horror. There's a strange creeping atmosphere. It's a usual storyline. Passers-by coming to this town. Strange things happen. People are murdered. What's going on? Jam-packed full of really famous faces. James Franciscus, Lisa Blount. You've got Melody Anderson from Flash Gordon. You've got a young Robert Englund in there. But it's all about the atmosphere on this one. Well, no, that's a lie. It's all about the atmosphere and Stan Winston's amazing special effects, all leading up to some strangely Lovecraftian reveal at the end. It's really hard to describe, but it's a beautifully atmospheric little chiller that's got a nice little sting in the tail, plus those practical effects. It's beautiful.
Didn't it hit the DPP list as well in the UK years back?
I'm not sure. I don't think it was on the initial list. I think it might have been caught up in the secondary one, the adjacent one.
Yeah.
But this release from Blue Underground, I mean, as well as it's got a lovely lenticular cover, which is ace, you know. But Blue Underground are really underrated when it comes to their releases. The transfer on it is utterly fantastic. It's got about 19 different audio tracks, including a brand new Atmos track, loads of new special features. It's a great release. And so my last one, I'm heading back across the sea. I'm heading to Europe. I'm going to France, which, as we all know, is what do they love in France? Jeez. They love blood and they love boobs. So therefore, you have to talk Jean Rollin and you have to talk about fascination. Now, these Indicator releases, so this is a UK release, Indicator are releasing most, if not all, of the Rollins. Now, Rollin is a very singular filmmaker. Narrative is for other people with him. It's all about mood, visuals, hallucinogenic dream logic. Fascination, though, is probably his most narratively structured film. Fairly simple tale of a 17th century cad escapes his gang, who is double-crossed, into a chateau populated by two very attractive young ladies who seem to be allergic to their clothes. But of course, strange things happen. And yes, these women also have a... Their tipple is of the warm claret variety, shall we say. It's still got all that beautiful atmospheric imagery that Roland's famous for, but it's not quite as hard to get into because there is at least a story there to hook you in. But again, indicator, they are doing brilliant work with these. These are not the easiest of films. A lot of them are 16mm. But they are restoring them beautifully with amazing Dolby Vision HDR grades, loads of extras, and the packaging on these are just absolutely sumptuous, you know. So yeah, well worth it. So those were my five, but nice. I'm gonna sneak a runner up in. And I'm sneaking a rubber up in only very quickly because it's not on 4K. If this was on 4K, this would have been in there.
About rules.
I don't care. I'm now breaking them. But everyone, go. And see Grabbers. Just go and see the film Grabbers. Grabbers is basically aliens landing in Ballykissangel. What they suddenly find is the aliens are allergic to alcohol.
I have seen it.
So if you are pissed, the aliens can't eat you. So Q, the entire village, trying to stay pissed while saving the world from an alien invasion. Honestly, if you like Father Ted, that's your new favorite film. Honestly, absolutely brilliant. It's funny. It's charming. It's got proper genre smarts. It's bloody. It's clever. Honestly, it's just great. Go watch it. Right, I'm done. That's
very
me done.
Nice. Very well nice, Mark.
Cheeky six.
Well done. Good nice. Picks. Good picks.
Top that crust.
Yeah. Give me what you got. Give me what you got.
Give me what I got. Okay, right. Right then. Wow, where to start? So these aren't in an order. Were yours in an order, Mark?
No, just pick them up
and show. Okay,
just
pick them up and show. Okay. So let's go with this one. Maybe I should introduce them before showing them off. Maybe I'll introduce them before showing them off for those people who are listening rather than viewing. So let's go back to the late 90s. Let's go to the J Horror Icons. What films have you got there? You've got the things like Audition. You've got Tale of Two Cities. You've got The Grudge, of course, which is a Mark reviewed a few times. But you've got The Eye. Remember that one? And, of course, you've got The Ring. The Ring is probably the most famous. But also written and directed by the same guy, Hideo Nakata.
Hideo.
Apologies for the terrible pronunciation there. He also did a few years later, after Ring, he did one called Dark Water, which is this disc here, been released in the UK by Arrow. And it's, although it's known by a few people, it doesn't really, when you talk about all those great films, it kind of comes in the back somewhere, but that's not really recognised as being one of the greats. And I'd like just to address that it should be, because it is just as terrifying. And it's very, very moving as well. The story is about a single mother who is being sort of terrorized by her husband because she wants to keep hold of her child. But then she gets terrorized by water. Doesn't sound scary, but my God, is it? It has got a fantastic build-up of tension all the way through. There's a genuine sense of unease, and it's really scary. The almost the final scenes of when the water is pouring down and the mother goes into the lift and the reveal is in the lift. It's like, oh my God, it's absolutely terrifying. But of course it doesn't end there. It goes on a little bit to explain exactly what was happening. And it's very, very sad. And it's really quite heartfelt as well, which is because it's not out and out horror. You've got the two sides of horror there. You've got the actual scare fest and you've got the mundane, the mother wanting to protect her child. So I think Dark Water needs a little bit more love. What do you think, guys?
Totally agree.
I think it does.
Love Dark Water.
Love Dark Water. Okay, so let's move on now. Let's go to some 1980s special effect creature features. We've already had Ticks, which is one, I suppose. When you think about creature features, all the super effects that you have, real tangible Superb films. You've got things like The Fly with superb effects. You've got American Werewolf in London.
The Thing.
Got The Howling. Bad Taste. I mean, it's slightly wonky, better effects there. You've got From Beyond. You just mentioned perhaps the most well-known is The Thing, of course, which is absolutely superb. Films that everyone's heard of, everyone knows. Now, the one I want to talk about, slightly different, is this one here. This is The Blob, a remake of the 90s, 50s film. And it should be held in exactly the same regard. But again, it doesn't seem to be. It seems to be kind of forgotten. And it ought not to be, because it's got some fantastic effects in here. The Blob is literally quite that, a blob. So when you've got the effects jumping on people, you see people melting. There's a scene when the girl's in a telephone box trying to ring for help, and the thing is oozing down the outside, and it crushes in and splats all over the back. Oh, it's superb. I love it. I love it. Ah, dear. Yes. Again, it's what, 90 minutes, 95 minutes. It's taut, it's super, it's one of those fantastic screenplays, a bit like Paddington 2, where everything's set up in the beginning and it all pays off at the end. It's
just like
Paddington
brilliant. 2.
Just like Paddington 2.
The Paddington 2 of 80s creature features.
Well, you know how it is. And God, it doesn't wimp out. You know, he finishes on a it's just awesome. He's got that real scare towards the end. Is it actually over? We don't know. There was never a follow-up, of course. What a shame. Never mind. Perhaps there should be. Now then, let's go to a real-life horror, shall we? A real-life horror. Now, when was it, 87, when there was the biggest scare to the world, when a nuclear power station melted down in Chernobyl, and it almost could have been death of half the world. And the story of it was brought to us a few years ago. This is the disc here. Again, this is not a UK disc. This comes from America, I think. It is available in 1080p in the UK, I believe, but not 4K. And I wanted the 4K because it's such a superb picture. Five-part series telling the story, slightly condensed, of what went wrong, what they did to put it right, and the devastating of after effects that is in fact is still going on over there. And it's a superb real life horror, real life, because this actually happened in here. It's thrilling, it's scary, it's fantastically acted. And when you see the radiation poison, how what actually happened to it, the people that stood there and watched this thing that were on the bridge, the death is incalculable. They at the end of the series, they put up some figures. The real figures aren't known because the Iron Curtain, they didn't want anyone to know exactly what happened, you know. But the story of the cleanup, you send some robots on the roof, the robots die. Okay, so what do? Well, we just send men in, and we keep sending men in, and we keep sending men in, and the only way to clean it up is just to keep sending men in and bury it in concrete. Scary, scary stuff, but fantastic series. And if you haven't seen it, you do need to see it.
Excellent.
Now then, let's go to. Okay. So I can't show you this disc because long-time listeners will know that my godson Dylan likes to borrow my films, and he has got this one of mine. This is again a late 80s horror film, known by two names. In America, it's known as Flesh Eater. In the UK, it's known as Zombie Nosh, which is just an incredible title for a horror film. And reminds me of Mark's microphone there. Flesh Eater. Okay, why is it called Flesh Eater? So, the star and director of this film is a guy called S. William Heinzman. Now, he was the first ghoul in Night of the Living Dead. The first guy stands up in the graveyard, yeah, and does the first chase, yeah. That's William Heinzman. Okay, the film was going to be called Night of the Flesh Eaters before it was changed to Night of the Living Dead. So that's where the name Flesh Eater comes from. Okay, so that's the link. Now he wanted to capitalize on that formula, but because we're now into late 80s, he wanted to make a far more gonzo, a far more exploitation film. And my God, did he really done it? It's 60mm. The story is just like a load of mates, boys and girls, go into, perhaps not boys and girls, youths, the youths of the day, go into a field. on the pretense of having someone's birthday party. They find a hole in the ground, they dig up the hole in the ground, and there he is, comes out, and he eats people, clothes fall off, people are covered in mud, there's plenty of inappropriate nudity. It's absolutely bonkers. Mark, you would love this film, and anyone who loves any cheap exploitation would love
it already.
Yeah, it's absolutely mental. It makes no sense, of course. It's ridiculous, but if you know what you're putting yourself in for, then you can have an absolute ball. It ends with a superb homage to Night of the Living Dead, but then it goes on for another 5 minutes just so that the director can put his face as the final screen. It's bonkers, absolutely bonkers. But you know, again, doesn't get much love because it is of its ilk. But if you can track it down, it's in America. Find it, Zombie Flesh Eater, beautiful film. My last one. Nice. I have reviewed this on site. I can't remember. This is a Christmas horror film. Now, you think of Christmas horrors, you can think of Gremlins, very, very famous film. Violent Night, not so much. Night Before Christmas, perhaps, you would think of. But I like to think of Krampus. Now, there's loads and loads and loads of Krampus films. I'm talking about the one by Michael Dougherty, whose Trick or Treat is just about to come out, I think, on 4K, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yep. Yes. Well, this is made directly after that, Krampus. This particular version, again, from the States, from Shout Factory, is the Naughty Cut. The Naughty Cut is about 20 seconds longer. Immaterial. What I love about this film, it is a genuinely scary film for a Christmas horror. It's based on folklore. It's horror in the case of if you ever go to a family dinner and no one's really quite getting on, or there's just awful social faux pas going on. That in itself is horrible enough. But when he starts going outside, when the Christmas horror comes into it, I really, really like it. Just a superb excuse in building terror and genuine scares. And it doesn't wimp out again at the end. It's a scary, secular film that is just awful. And I love it. I really, really love it. There you go. That's five films that should be known,
nice,
should be much better known than what they currently are. In
nice.
My view.
Very nice. Very nice. That's good. That's a good lineup. And we've actually covered, well, we haven't covered all of them. We probably need to cover a few more of these. I feel bad that we've actually covered all of the ones that I've picked. But you see, the trouble is here, Mark talked about rules, and I was going to do rules. I was all set to do rules. And then I played Nerf guns with my 8-year-old son. And while I'm playing Nerf guns, he has me at gunpoint, and he makes me put my gun down. I got my hands up, and he thinks he's won. And I reach my hands behind my back, and I got a tiny little Nerf gun stuck to my neck behind my back, and I get it.
Christmas tape.
Yep. And he goes, "No, that's against the rules. You can't do that." And I'm like, "Okay, fine, you win that." And so the next bit, I set my gun up very nicely behind a pillow and aim it at him through the door. He comes bursting in the door to get me, and I'm behind the door. So I completely take him out of it. No, you can't have two guns. So again, it was an ever evolving game where it seemed like all of my John Woo based skills were completely ineffective against his lineup of made up as we go along rules. So I have no rules for this list. This list is, some of these titles I'm not even sure are horror. So the reality behind them is that they are the most mainstream. I mean, we've gone from Zombie Nosh to Adam Wingard. So they're the most mainstream of anyone's list, but I'm still going to do it because I am having no more rules today, Mark. I'm having no more rules.
Fine.
First one is Wingard and Barrett doing You're Next for $1 million, I think. $1 million film. Very nice. Very nicely executed home invasion film.
Mm-hmm.
I am not the world's biggest horror fan, but I do like a cleverly done horror, and that is one. And it displayed, I've put in here, The Guest, which isn't a horror, but kind of is. I mean, it's very much, I'm putting it as a nod because it's what Wingard would do next. And in my review, I said it was like a blend of The Hitcher and Drive. You know, insanely stylish, And also this sense that who the hell is this guy who you've let in your life who was going to stalk you? Very, very nicely done. And another crazy performance from Dan Stevens. The next one is High Tension, Alexandra Ajar.
Mm-hmm.
I've got real problems with the way they go in this. But as an exercise in pure horror tension, it's 90% excellent. It's just, it gets you almost to the end being just excellent. You almost wish they just got to the end and didn't bother explaining any of it, because the ride was disturbing, surprising, fabulously acted, and desperately tense. I mean, I absolutely loved it.
It opened the floodgates for French horror, didn't it? Brilliant.
It did. Mm-hmm. And it should do. And it's a great little movie, but it does go over off the tracks for me. But if you haven't checked it out, that's worth hunting down. And I'll come back to the disc releases for these in a second, because they all follow a very similar pattern. Possessor, which is Brandon Cronenberg, David Cronenberg's son, and for my money, very much stepped up to the plate of his father's legacy when his father was actually lagging a little bit in a couple of the features he'd recently
written about in serious drama, Kaz.
All right.
Something. say it like it is. Don't pull your punches.
I mean, whatever he was doing was okay, but it wasn't existence. And this is kind of a 2024 low-budget existence kind of romp with slightly less organic guns. tooth-firing organic guns. Possessor. This is Brandon Cronenberg doing a sort of a high concept sci-fi-ish idea of body possession assassins, extremely violent, but it's almost like the horror and the violence of it are not a part of what makes the story great, but are absolutely fantastic at hammering home the sheer brutality of the situation. So it's not really a horror in a way, but the sheer blood and guts on offer is definitely horror-tastic. The last one from this particular cadre is It Follows, which
a great film.
Is a great little movie. I just have to assume that if I, as a person who isn't big into horror, have seen all of these are like mainstream titles, but I'm throwing them out there because some of them are quite small. Things like High Tension, people might not notice. It's a nice little collection for people who may be big into horror but might not have seen anything that isn't mainstream, which isn't for the likes of Mark and Simon, but I'm hoping there's people out there. Anyway, It Follows is a great one. I threw in The Neon Demon because I thought The Guest doesn't count. And The Neon Demon is Nicholas Winding Refn going absolutely mental with, I think it's some weird mix up of like vampires and witches and fashion and narcissism set to a tremendous soundtrack with insane visuals, and it's a sublime audiovisual experience. But it is the only one interesting on this list that hasn't really been done justice. It was given an SDR only release from PlayOn, who I have to thank for getting me Hard Target, so they're not all bad. But all the other titles I mentioned, You're Next, The Guest, High Tension, Possessor, and It Follows, are common in one thing. They are all from Second Sight, and they have all those lovely fat, take up too much space, hard card box sets, all the lavish features. You know the transfers are going to be across the board spectacular. They've really picked out all these movies and gone, I mean, doing The Guest and then going back and doing Your Next, genius, keep it up. They've really picked out a lovely selection of movies, and movies that I would even as someone who's not as big a horror fan. And The Witch could have gone on there as Second Sight as well. Anyway, I'm not going to get carried away from...
Now he's talking about rules, Kaz. Just add, keep going. Just keep going. Stick another 12 in. Why don't you?
There's no rules after the Nerf gun battle I had. Anyway, those are my extremely mainstream adjacent selections for horror
All
gems.
All good.
But it's the best I can do because I'm not zombie nosh level of
no
horror.
One.
It's a
zombie
title,
nosh,
isn't it? Zombie nosh. It's a
no
title.
One zombie nosh.
Oh, right. It's hilarious. It is absolutely hilarious.
We have a number of titles on this that we have not reviewed, including a pretty big hitter, which is Cabin in the Woods. That is more mainstream than some of the others. If you would like us to cover any of these, do shout out. I might force the team to anyway, but that's another story for, you know, off camera. That is it for the AV Forums podcast this week. My thanks to the movie team. If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a like and subscribe to the channel. Plus, hit the notification bell so you don't miss out when we publish our live streams, product reviews, and more. If you really like this podcast and buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/AVForums, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and bookmark avforums.com for the latest reviews, news, and videos. Plus, why not leave us a 5-star rating on whichever service you use, if they allow it, but only if you enjoyed the show. Well, obviously you enjoyed the show, but anyway, thank you for watching and listening. Join us for another podcast soon. Bye.
Cheers all.